Ron and Anian.
This is that radio show that kind of points out the obvious and says, isn't that stupid?
The Car Doctor.
I'm kind of starting to think that maybe this is too much of a job to be doing out here in the driveway, and maybe I actually ought to go see a car doctor and let them take care of it.
Yeah, if it's something you're not comfortable with.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Here's the story I'm not supposed to talk about. I wasn't going to do this, but I'm not going to do this on air. Shh, don't tell anybody. So about 2.5 weeks ago, I got the renewal for the plow truck from the state of New Jersey and the motor vehicle department. And they gave me the option to renew the plate online, to renew the registration online. So I said, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to. New Jersey Motor Vehicle, my God, the lines are around the block, and it's, you know, pack your lunch, pack your dinner, bring a sleeping bag. You're going to live there, you know. So I renewed online. Now, the registration said it was $138. This has nothing to do with the show today. I just want to show you how stupid motor vehicle agencies are and how poorly run they are, especially in New Jersey. I'm going to declare war, I think, on New Jersey Motor Vehicle. Let's see where that leads me. And the registration form said $138. And everybody in New Jersey is going to cheer when I tell this story because they've been through this. So I go online and I go to renew the registration and it says $145. It's $7 more. I don't really care about the $7. I figured I was being charged a premium for something that I just don't have the time, all right? You know, you're in a repair shop 5 days a week, do a national show on Saturday. You're busy. Sunday's your only day to have a meltdown, and just you don't want to be thinking about things like this. So I paid the $145 plus the convenience fee for using my credit card, and it was $148 and change. The mail just came to the studio. They just forwarded it today, and I just got it. It says, Dear Mr. Anani, your registration renewal for plate blah, blah, blah with October registration expiration mistakenly applied the senior discount of $7. You must either send in your renewal with the total fee of the listed fee plus $7 or renew online where you'll be charged the correct fee. Now, I renewed online 2.5 weeks ago, and the letter just got here. And you've got to wonder, for an agency run by the government, dictated by the government, all right, that they can't even get their ducks in a row, that the form came to me in July. It took till September for them to tell me that it was inadvertently or incorrectly printed, and now they're advising me to call them up or somehow contact them. Could you imagine trying to contact New Jersey Motor Vehicle by phone and saying, hey, you charged me the wrong thing. Where's my $7? They're crazy. I got to move to a state where you can. Somebody told me Maryland. You can go to Maryland, Maryland Motor Vehicle. You can make an appointment, go in and get treated like a human being, sit down and have a conversation with somebody. I got to go there. I got to try that. Anyway, this is the Car Doctor. We do talk about cars. I thought that was something car related. It just came to me. I was like, you know, talk about stupidity running a motor vehicle agency. I just can't fathom it. Here, wait, listen to what we're going to do with it. Let's run it through the shredder. But that isn't what I wanted to talk about this hour. Here's what I wanted to tell you. And I'm going to do this real quick, Tom. I want to talk to you about how things are antiquated and need to be updated, especially at motor vehicle agencies. No, I'll stop. I'll get off of them. We had an 11 Toyota Sienna. You know, you guys go out and you buy these new cars and you think they're the latest and the greatest and the best innovation and how wonderful everything is, right? Harry Nadler is probably dead 10 years now. He was my first landlord, and I can use his name. There's no more family relatives' names. It's Harry was an interesting guy. He was a Chevy dealer here in New Jersey. He was a first lieutenant, third wave at EWO. He used to tell me the stories about the invasions and collect his check. And just, he was a crotchety old guy, but he was interesting to listen to. He always had good comments and good things to say. And I remember him telling me the story about before the war, his father had a Ford dealership in downtown Brooklyn, New York. And one of the cars they took in trade in 1938 was a Duesenberg. And Harry worked at the dealership doing car wash and cleanup around the lot. And he saved his money and he bought this Duesenberg for probably at the time was an unheard of sum of $500 or $300, whatever the number was. Harry said it was astounding. He says when used cars were $150, this Duesenberg was $300 or $400. And he said, and I had to have it. It was something on that magnitude. He said it was the neatest thing I'd ever seen. And I drove around in this Duesenberg. And then the war broke out. And he said, I didn't want my Duesenberg. I didn't want to sell it. I didn't know what to do with it. So I took it all apart. I packed it up in Cosmoline and boxed it all up in my parents' garage, and I went off to war. Now, he gets back from the war. This is around 46 or 47, and he bumped into this guy. He tells you the story of the federal courthouse downtown Manhattan. He bumped into this guy that he had seen prior to leaving for the war, and he had been after Harry to sell him the Duesenberg before the war, and now he's still, hey, Harry, you know, you still have that Duesenberg? I'd love to get it. Yeah, it's all packed up. He said, I'll give you $2,000 for it, sight unseen. $2,000 in 1947 was a ton of dough. And, you know, Harry said, I said, I figured that the market had peaked. I'd never get more than that for it. I sold him the car. That has nothing to do with my point, but I just thought I would tell you that, you know, crazy things happen. Cosmoline Tom wants to know it's a preservative to help keep metal parts from rusting. So the whole car was coated in that so it wouldn't rust. Harry sells him the Duesenberg for $2,000. And I said, Harry, what's your point? He says, my point is that things never really change. They just come around full circle. Somehow we got onto this conversation, right? And he said, there's really nothing new about cars. He says, Duesenberg had fuel injection. Duesenberg had disc brakes. Duesenberg was ahead of its time. And then they just reinvented it in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and so on. And I think Harry was gone by 2001, and that's as far as he went. He was 93 when he passed. But I never forgot that. That I never forgot the Duesenberg story, because a Duesenberg today, I'm going to make a fool of myself. I think a Duesenberg is worth well over $1 million, and they might be worth more. They're just astounding automobiles. But every time I see something like I saw in this 11 Toyota Sienna, I think of Harry Nadler. An 11 Sienna came into the shop this week, and the driver's sliding door, you know the sliding doors, the left and right sliding doors? The sliding door on the left side, driver's side, didn't work. And there's a cable hanging down, just this long metal cable. And we looked at it. You ever go into a house from the 40s and look at the windows? It's a pulley and trolley system, right? With weights that, you know, hang on the cable and it pulls it and it helps you open and close the window. There's a metal weight in there, the old style windows. That's what this 11 CN is using. They've got a double-ended cable pulley system that retracts and contracts and expands, and it's constantly pulling on itself to open and close the door. You know, a $75 part and too many hours of labor to take everything apart and put it together, and you say to yourself, and this is a $60,000 vehicle. And yet we buy these things in the droves, and everybody goes rushing down there and goes ooh and ah over the next shiny penny until it breaks. And I couldn't help but think of Harry Nadler. They really haven't invented anything new. They've just taken everything that they've invented in the past 100 years and they've somehow applied it to a newer car, and they've made us all think that it's new. And they've made it all think that it's something they've recreated. But in fact, it was probably on a Duesenberg. I don't know if they had a pulley system to open and close doors on a Duesenberg, but I think of Harry Nadler when I think about that. And Tom's telling me a 29 Duesenberg is worth almost $1 million. Probably, Tom. Probably worth at least $1 million today. And all I can say is I'm glad Harry's gone, because if he knew that car he sold for $2,000 and 47 was worth $1 million, it would kill him. And that would be a terrible thing. He was an interesting guy. He really was. Third wave at Iwo Jima. I'll never forget the stories, and rest in peace, Harry. Let's kick the garage doors open. I am Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. When I return, 855-560-9900. We're going to do just that. Don't you go away. We'll be back right after this.
Write it on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's go to Joe in Vermont, 87 Jeep Cherokee, and high mileage wants to talk about that a little bit. Joe, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, Ron, how are you this fine day?
I am great, sir. I am really great. What's going on?
Well, I just wanted to give a call. I listen to your show every week, and I drive an 87 Jeep Cherokee. It's my daily vehicle up here in Salt Country.
Yep.
And the body is as solid as the day it rolled off the assembly line.
Probably because you keep after it and take care of it.
Undercoat it with automatic transmission fluid and chainsaw bar oil every other year.
Yep. Yeah, you can't do that down here because it's bad for the environment, or so they say. So we'll.
Well, they actually have a state-sanctioned station down by Rutland, Vermont, where you drive in, they put you up on a lift, they do all the undercoating. You drive out the back, and they request that you drive down the dirt road, which is about 12 miles long.
Oh, so common sense.
Yeah.
Wow, what a concept.
But when you get in when you get into downtown, they usually have it on the muffler by then.
Right.
So you're sitting at a stoplight, and there's smoke coming out, and people are looking at you, and you just kind of wave at them.
Well, and, you know, to the point, you know, my opening comments about Harry Nadler, when Harry said to me, he goes, Ron, they never really invent anything new with cars. They just recreate and market something they created, you know, 25, 50, 75, 100 years ago. And to that point, you know, they've got to create something new, because if we made cars really last, think of all the jobs that would be lost. Think of all the industry that we wouldn't have. Think of all the things that we wouldn't, you know, there'd be no marketing, no advertising. It wouldn't be the way it is. It's become so, you know, it's gotten ridiculous is what it has.
Throwaway society.
Yeah, it really is a throwaway society. You know, I feel guilty. I bought a... I'm going to say the name wrong. A Bevel toaster. It's a four-slice toaster. Gorgeous toaster. It's about 4 years old now. It's computerized. I couldn't help it. It was kind of neat. You can set the dials, and you know, and it made perfect toast. Bremel. I got to look up the name now when I get home. I got to look in the kitchen. And just this morning, I was making an English muffin. You know, you want that English muffin to come out nice and golden brown. It's starting to lose that. The setting is starting to lose its adjustment after 4 years, and I'm thinking, God, don't tell me I have to throw my toaster away. I'm going to have to figure out how to fix it. I'll take it apart and make it work, because I don't want it to be a throwaway society. I don't want to throw away a toaster. I don't want to throw away a car, even though they have a lot of the same characteristics. They're both appliances, and they're both becoming throwaway items, and it's the honest truth. You know, is that Jeep a stick or an automatic?
Oh, automatic.
Yeah, and it's got 225,000 miles on it. 4 liter,
yes,
or four? What was it in 87, Joe? Was it a 4 liter or a 4.2?
4.0 straight.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And you know why they got rid of that engine? Because it'll go 200,000. It'll go that engine will go 500,000 miles. The only thing that ever goes wrong with those is if you don't do enough cooling system maintenance, they go through head gaskets and maybe once in a while crack a head. But other than that, the bottom ends on those things are indestructible. And if that has the Asian automatic transmission, I think 17 pan bolts, the long rectangular pan bolt trans, we never rebuilt. They just don't go bad. They just lasted forever. They really did. You just couldn't abuse them to the point to break them. And, you know, in 87, those vehicles just were doing so well. And then by the mid-90s, Jeep had re-engineered things to the point that they changed engines, they changed transes, and it was the beginning of their decline. So, well, enjoy it, sir. Enjoy it.
I do. And the other key is have a good mechanic and don't be afraid of the cost.
Right. Don't be afraid of the cost is right. You know, we have a regular listener, Eddie Goitis. I keep telling him he's the financial guru, and he's got this really great cost analysis. And I keep threatening to put it up on Facebook, and I'm going to have to try and do it again. I forget. I get so overwhelmed during the course of the week. But Eddie broke down the cost of car ownership for me one day, penny for penny, pound for pound. And in so many cases, it just makes sense to, you know, spend the money on the car and keep the car going longer when a lot of people just run away from it. So it's the absolute truth.
It's been mine for 218 months, and I spend $154.39 on a monthly basis. That includes everything but registration and insurance.
Right. That's right. And you know what? You know the vehicle, and you know what you're getting, and you still enjoy it. Joe, I got to move the day along. I appreciate the call.
Okay.
You stay good up there in Vermont and enjoy your Jeep. And thanks for being part of the Car Doctor family. David in Iowa. David, welcome back, sir. How's things out Iowa way today?
Long time no see. I hope you guys are staying safe.
Yeah, we're staying safe. What's going on?
Well, hey, I've got a 2005 Chevrolet Silverado truck that I bought for $250. It used to be a mail truck from a guy, and he let it go to hell. It was so full of Iowa mud, you wouldn't believe it. I took it home. I actually drove it home, believe it or not.
Right.
And I cleaned it up. I took it to a mechanic, and it needed a lot, well, not a lot of stuff, but it has a good motor in it, clean oil and everything before I drove it back home. But anyway, they're having trouble with the brake system. I've got too much distance on the brakes. We tried to repair the bearings, the brake pads, and all that. And I think it probably has something to do that they don't realize how you bleed those things. And I know I looked it up on the internet, and it says you have to bleed them at least 3 times. And there are also not just I had him put brake lines through the whole truck. And they managed to put those in there. I was wondering if one of the tubes could have been bent, whether there is crap that's in the cylinder when it reaches the brake cylinder.
Well, let me ask you this, David. What did they do? Did they change the master and the rest of the hydraulics?
I don't know what they did.
Okay, so here, let's start at the beginning, all right? If they've overhauled the brake system, we'll make some assumption, all right, for the purpose of the call. You know, if they've overhauled the brake system, it's an older vehicle, it's an 05, it's got a few miles on it, it was a mail truck. You know, mail trucks are notoriously tough on brakes. It's stop, go, stop, go, stop, go all day long,
yeah.
All right? So let's assume they did a master cylinder and 4 calipers. They changed some brake lines, they put pads on it, and they can't get a pedal out of it, all right? They've got to start at the beginning. They've got to bleed the master, either bench bleed it or bleed it on the vehicle. All right? And I could go through the pain of explaining how to bench bleed it or bleed it on the vehicle, but I've got to hope that they know how to do that. They're a repair shop. When they get the air out of the master, then they've got to, you know, what kind of pedal do they have? You know, you can get plugs for the master cylinder. Bleed the master, plug it, step on the brake. Do you have a good hard pedal? Yes or no? Good. It's good. Let's move on. Put the lines on the master. Go down to the calipers and begin bleeding the system going around, purging air from the system. Now, if they go all the way around and they get all the air out of the system and they still have a crummy pedal, and they've done this 1 time, 2 times, 3 times, and the calipers are installed correctly and everything is lubed correctly, and they've checked to make sure that the distance between the pedal push rod going into the booster and the brake pedal linkage isn't worn out and all the crazy things you look at in higher mileage, older vehicles, the next thing they have to consider, because I'm sure this is an anti-lock brake equipped vehicle, is to do a bleed on the ABS control unit. And for that, they're going to need a scan tool. They're going to need a device that will plug into the OBD2 port, the connector under the dash. And there's a procedure they're going to find in the ABS section of that scan tool that talks about specifically things they have to do. Step on the pedal, wait for the pump to run, open a bleeder. There's a whole process they've got to go through, because if there's air trapped in the ABS controller, they're never going to be able to displace it or push it out by doing a simple conventional bleed. Again, depending upon what was done, but that's basically a brake system overhaul for that generation vehicle, and that's probably the steps they need to go through. More than that, call me back. You know where to find me. Always good to hear from you, David, out of Iowa Way. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor. We'll return right after this. Welcome back. Ron Anani, the Car Doctor. Let's go over to Patel in Indiana. Wants to talk about a 13 Cadillac and brake bleeding. Patel, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hey, Ron. How are you doing? I appreciate your help.
You're very welcome. What's going on with this Caddy?
So I have this Cadillac just approached 100,000 miles.
Okay.
It belongs to my very good friend.
Right.
And he said, I want to keep it. I said, okay, so refresh all the fluids. And I seen the brake fluid looks like dark burned oil.
Right.
So I said, let's flush the brake fluid first.
Sure, yep.
And I made a little device from the sprayer bottles from the big box stores.
Okay.
So I put a gauge on that. So I'm trying to pressurize between 10 to 12 PSI, and I made an adapter out of plastic and rubber things that will mount on top of the reservoir. And my goal is to pressurize that 10 to 12 psi through the master cylinder. Of course, so, like take all the old fluid out, put a fresh fluid in, and then put that adapter on and pressurize that sprayer about 10 to 12 psi, and crack the caliper bleeding nipples on the wheels. Doing this, would that be okay to do it, or I still need to involve a scan from GM?
I don't think 10 pounds of pressure is going to be enough to pressurize the system, to be perfectly honest with you.
What do you suggest? I can go up.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at you know, normal brake pedal operating pressure. You'll see pressure is much higher than that, 300 to 600 PSI, right. 1,200 PSI. So before we start making rudimentary devices with pressure built into them and we're developing the next bomb in our face, kind of an issue, which is right. My bigger concern, let's do it this way.
Okay.
All right? Let's do it this way.
Okay.
Take that plastic bottle you bought from the big box store and cut the top off. All right.
Okay.
So now you have roughly, or better yet, go down to your local fast food store and get the large drink that they sell with it, your favorite beverage that comes in a large plastic cup. Or take a quart brake fluid bottle and cut the top off so you've got a wide mouth, not the small neck that you pour from.
Right.
All right. Mm-hmm. And take, probably 18 inches of rubber nine vacuum line. Curl it up, make a pigtail, put you know, two or three loops in the bottom of it, and then take a binder clip, a black binder clip from the local office supply, and hold the hose to the top of the bottle, and take the remaining rubber hose, as long as you want it to be, the right diameter on the inside so it fits over the bleeder, fill the bottom of the cup about a quarter of the way with brake fluid, clean fluid, empty the master, put that on the bleeder. Okay, I always start with the left front, the shortest distance to the master. So I'm pushing all the crud out through the shortest distance to get rid of it out of the system first. All right? Open the bleeder, fill the master, and slowly stroke the pedal. All right?
Okay.
The reason I like to do that, and you can have a helper stroke the pedal, and you've got to teach them how to stroke. You've got to teach them, you know, drummers are the best brake bleeders because you can teach them the 1-2 count. All right. If somebody's got musical inclination, they make better brake bleeders. Because I've gotten people that want to tap dance and it's like boom boom boom. No, slow down. All right. You know, it's like it's just, you know, nice and easy, nice and slow. Get a steady rhythm, and you're going to push 10 to 12 cycles of the pedal. You'll see all the crud come out. Stop. Close the bleeder. Fill the master. All right. Empty the cup. Look at the crud that's in the bottom of the cup, and you'll get it. You know, I like working the pedal by hand because you're working the hydraulics as if you were operating the vehicle. All right?
Right.
And you want to do that until, you know, you'll get about 80%, 90% clean out of that one left front. Once that's done, then go around and manually bleed the rest of the system. All right? Okay. And if you do this right and you take your time, you know, the idea is if the hose is in the cup exposed, if it's underneath brake fluid, you're not going to, you know, let air get in. As long as it doesn't leak air around the bleeders aren't worn on the calipers, you should be fine. And then once you're done with that, if you've got a good pedal, you don't need to bleed the ABS controller, so you won't need a scan tool. They always tell you to manually bleed first and then do the ABS bleed, all right, and then go back and bleed the system again. And then we'll always go around and we'll just, you know, one or two pumps, crack the bleeder, and just to make sure if there's any air there, purge it out. And then when you're done, if you don't have them on there, go out and get some bleed caps from the local auto parts store, because it's always nice to put bleed caps. And then I'll take some wheel bearing grease or some yellow grease, and I'll spooge it around the hex nut of the bleeder and the threads. It kind of keeps moisture out of there, and it takes a set, and it lasts a little while. And sometimes I'll be lucky and grease stays there a long time, depending upon the environment the vehicle's operating in. But that's good caliper maintenance. That's good brake maintenance. But that's the way to do it. That way we make sure that we're getting all the crud and the contaminant out, and we're not going to risk hurting ourselves creating devices. I understand what you're doing, and I think it's brilliant what you're attempting. But you know, sometimes you don't need to reinvent the bridge. Enough.
Got it.
All right.
Now, can I have one more question?
One more question.
If you have a time.
Two for a nickel. Then I gotta
go. Sure. So now when I'm applying brake, I just took a test drive, and when I apply brake about 40, 50 miles to the over, and then let's say red light approaches, so I try and apply a brake, I feel a little bit off, like a feedback on a steering wheel.
Like the steering wheel, like the steering wheel shakes.
Right.
So go faster, get out to the highway, do 55, 60, take an 8 to 10 minute ride, do 55, 60, and lightly touch the pedal. Not a full stop, just lightly touch it and then start to apply it more. If the steering wheel shakes, if the shake is in the wheel, you've likely got a front brake rotor that's out of round or got a pulse to it because it's distorted. Maybe somebody's over-tightened lug nuts. Maybe somebody's machined the rotors too much. Maybe the calipers or the brake pads don't move freely on the slide. Somebody's done an improper brake repair. But something's caused the front brakes to distort the front rotors. All right? And then take it for a second ride. Now, if it's gone in the steering wheel or you feel it in the seat of your pants, and I've had it where the shake in the steering wheel is so bad, you can't tell that it's in the seat of your pants. So you start with the front and then move to the back, but as long as the shake is gone. But more than likely, that is a front rotor pulse. Of course, you want to check the front end, nothing loose, nothing worn, you know, no other issues on this seven-year-old car. But from your description, very common, you're more than likely talking about a bad set of brake rotors that need to be repaired or replaced. All right, Patel, do that. Call me back if you need more. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's get over and talk to Maureen in New York City, 03 Pontiac Grand Am. Maureen, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I called once before a while ago about a problem, but the issue now is I just had, check engine light went off and the valve, control valve was replaced with a different one.
Okay.
And now the check engine light doesn't go on. It stays off. So that was the problem. But I was told that I have to drive the car a little each day to clear the computer for inspection.
Right.
How true is that? Because I don't always drive. Sometimes I take public transportation and I'm in the city.
So you got up this morning, right? You showered, you brushed your teeth, you had breakfast, you had coffee, you listened to the radio.
Well, yes.
You had your morning routine, right? So
a car
does the same thing. Do you ever think about how a car knows when to turn on a check engine light? Do you ever think about the what's going on behind the scenes and how that happens?
Well, not really, no. It just indicates that something's
wrong. But how does it know something's wrong? You know, you've been sick in your lifetime, right, Maureen? You woke up on Monday, you had the sniffles, Tuesday you had the aches, Wednesday you had the runny nose and you had the cold, right? So Monday you started not feeling well, Tuesday your brain said, "Hey, it's getting worse," and Wednesday your check engine light went on. Right? So car computers do the same thing, but they do it every time you cycle the key. So every time you turn the key on, that car computer, depending upon year, make, model, and the amount of electronics and its programming, it's running a self-test of its circuits. And it tests different components at different times under different conditions. All right? If you had aches and pains in your joints, but you weren't walking, you wouldn't know you had aches and pains in your joints for the coming cold, right? Until you started walking. So you have to get up and start walking to feel those aches and pains. The car computer can't test all of its circuits sitting there idling in Maureen's driveway, garage, or parking spot. All right.
No,
I understand that. But my point is the vehicle needs to operate under a wide range of conditions because that's how they set its programming. So the mechanic that told you this, he's not wrong. The vehicle needs to run what we call monitors or self-tests. All right. Now, some of those self-tests are done at 30 to 35 miles an hour. Some of those self-tests are done at 55 to 60 miles an hour. Some of those.
Well, I don't like driving the highway.
Well, you see,
I'm
and then that's going to be an issue for you. So, you know, what I always tell everybody, if you're not a highway driver, if you're in an area that, you know, doesn't really, it's not conducive to you taking it out onto the highway or you just can't get there, the mechanic, if he's trained properly, knows how to run a drive cycle, knows how to run and create the conditions that will make the monitors or the self-tests run to completion and allow the vehicle to be ready for inspection. You can pay for that service. It typically takes up to an hour of shop time. So depending upon what their labor rate is, it'll be up to that hour. All right? But
it's not a regular inspection?
That's not part of regular inspection. No, ma'am. Not in any state that I'm aware of. You bring a vehicle to a repair shop in New Jersey. If it's Jersey inspection, and I know New York, I'm just saying New Jersey as an example. That vehicle is inspected in as-received condition. As a matter of fact, as motor vehicle inspectors, we're supposed to take that vehicle in as-received condition and inspect it at that moment. Now, if we've done a repair to it, we have to document that repair, run the drive cycle, or have you run the drive cycle, and then inspect it. That's a different story. But
That's what he said, to drive it a little each day, about 30 minutes.
Right. But
each day,
you know,
for a couple of days.
And he's not wrong, under varying conditions and speeds. But if you can't get out to the highway and do 55, 60... then, you know, puttering around town at 20 miles an hour isn't going to do it. It's just not going to run all the monitors. And the vehicle won't pass.
I'll just have to ask him if there's such a service
right.
that he can do that
and
for
he
me.
Can do that. And he should be able to. All right?
What is it called?
Ask him, can he run the vehicle's monitors so that it's ready for state inspection? Running monitors.
Okay.
Can he run the monitors for state inspection? And what would that cost? All right.
Okay. So run the vehicle's monitors.
Monitors. Yes. Monitors for state inspection. All right.
Well, I have another question.
Real quick.
I have until the end of September. If I drove the car every day for
Are you going to go 55, 60 miles an hour?
Well, no, because the
then it
speed
won't matter.
Limit in New York is...
It won't matter. It won't matter. If it did pass and run its monitors, it's by the grace of God that it worked, because that's not how the programming is designed. We can actually look up for an 03 Pontiac Grand Am and look at the drive cycle. And the drive cycle, I know from memory, varies somewhere between 28 miles an hour up to 62. So if you're not going to break the 50-mile-an-hour barrier... You know, listen, computers have been wrong before, but you're asking me to go against, you know, written fact that it says, hey, here's what you have to do to get the monitors to run. Is it possible? Sure, anything's possible. Is it likely? No. So take it to the mechanic, have him run the drive cycle. Good luck to you, Maureen. 855-560-9900. Ron and Ian, the car doctor, coming back right after this.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Let's get over to Wes in Virginia. Ron and Annie, the car doctor at your service. Wes, how can I help? I got 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. I've got a 2007 Toyota Avalon Limited.
Right.
And one of the tire pressure gauges went out. So I got I have a friend who got me a factory one.
Right.
They put it in, but he can't get it on his tool to reset the dashboard so the dashboard light goes off. He said I have to go to a dealership and they want to charge $200 just to reset the thing. Is there a different way to get that thing
so
that the light goes off?
Yeah, so let me ask this question. When he got you the new sensor, did you program it to the vehicle or you just installed it to the car?
He programmed it with the programmer that he has, but what he has apparently, he said, he talked to a friend of his and said that it must be a Toyota.
Well, it has here. Let's do it like
computer
this.
Thing.
Let's do it like this. Do you still have the old sensor?
Yes.
Okay.
In front of me, but yes, I have.
Right. When you get off the air, look at the old sensor. There's a serial number or a registration number on that sensor. Okay.
Yes.
That number is burned into the tire pressure module, because that's how it knows that it's your car. Do you ever stop to wonder, like, we've got all these cars with tire pressure sensors on them, and you're sitting at a traffic light, and how come the guy next to you with low tire pressure doesn't register on your system? Because it's within proximity, because every sensor has a unique identifying digital code. So you, so the new sensor you put in now has to, you have to train your system to stop looking for the old one with that number and start looking for
right, but he says the
new
only,
one.
Yes, but he says the only system that can do that would be one that's from a Toyota.
No, that's not true.
You know, the computer
system. That's not true. There's a majority of aftermarket scan tools, Alltel, Snap-on, Launch. They all do TPMS programming, and they should all be capable of that. Do you have a regular garage, a regular mechanic other than the dealer?
Yes, it's a friend of mine that he works for Ford. Okay. But he's very familiar with all the cars, but he's a certified Ford
right. Well, a Ford dealership is not going to have the capability to program a Toyota. But an independent repair, because a Ford dealership has to work on Fords. But an independent repair shop is geared towards the variety of cars, where Ford is specific to Ford and Toyota's specific to Toyota. You've got to find the neighborhood garage. Do they have the ability to program a factory TPMS sensor to your vehicle? Chances are they do. If not, there are other sensors out there that can be used to replace that. But, you know, a couple of bucks to program something. Everything costs money and everything takes time. So good luck to you, Wes. Let me know how you make out. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless.